Stephen.
He had three brothers, Gilbert, Edmund, Richard. Gilbert, in his old age, told some cavaliers he got a pass for nowt from Maister Gatherer one time, mass he did, and he seen his brood Maister Wool, the playwriter, up in London in a wrestling play with a man on his back. The playhouse sausage filled Gilbert's soul. He is nowhere. But an Edmund and a Richard are recorded in the works of Sweet William.
McGee, Glenjohn.
Names. What's in a name?
Best.
That is my name, Richard, don't you know? I hope you're going to say a good word for Richard, don't you know, for my sake.
Buck Mulligan, piano diminuendo.
Then out spoke Medical Dick to his comrade Medical Davy.
Stephen.
In his trinity of black wills, the villain Shakebags, Iago, Richard Crookback, Edmund and King Lear, two bear the wicked uncle's names. Nay, that last play was written or being written while his brother Edmund lay dying in Southwark.
Best.
I hope Edmund is going to catch it. I don't want Richard, my name.
Quicker, Lister, at tempo.
But he that filches from me my good name.
Stephen, stringendo.
He has hidden his own name, a fair name, William, in the plays, a super here, a clown there, as a painter of old Italy set his face in a dark corner of his canvas. He has revealed it in the sonnets, where there is Will in overplus. Like John a Gaunt, his name is dear to him, as dear as the coat of arms he toadied for. On a bend sable, a spear oar, steeled argent, honorific a billitudin a tatabus, dearer than his glory of greatest shake seen in the country. What's in a name? That is what we ask ourselves in childhood when we write the name that we are told is ours. A star, a day star, a fire drake rose at his birth. It shone by day in the heavens alone, brighter than Venus in the night, and by night it shone over Delta and Cassiopeia, the recumbent constellation which is the signature of his initial among the stars. His eyes watched it, low-lying on the horizon, eastward of the Bear, as he walked by the slumberous summer fields at midnight, returning from Shottery and from her arms.
Both satisfied. I too. Don't tell them he was 9 years old when it was quenched. And from her arms. Wait to be wooed and won. Aye, me a cock, who will woo you? Read the skies. Auton timoriumenos, bus stephanumenos. Where's your configuration? Stephen, Stephen, cut the bread even. S.D. Sua donna, ya, dilui. Gelindo resolvi di non amar S.D.
What is that, Mr. Dedalus?
The Quaker librarian asked.
Was it a celestial phenomenon?
A star by night?
Stephen said.
A pillar of the cloud by day.
What more is to speak?
Stephen looked on his hat, his stick, his boots.
Stephanos, my crown, my sword. His boots are spoiling the shape of my feet. Buy a pair. Holes in my socks. Handkerchief, too.
You make good use of the name.
John Eglinton aloud.
Your own name is strange enough. I suppose it explains your fantastical humour.
Me, McGee and Mulligan. Fabulous artificer, the hawk-like man. You flew. Where to? New Haven, Dieppe, steerage passenger. Paris and back. Lapwing. Icarus. Pater. Eight. Sea bedabbled, fallen, weltering. Lapwing you are. Lapwing he.
Mr. Best, eager quietly, lifted his book to say...
That's very interesting, because that brother motive, don't you know, we find also in the old Irish myths. Just what you say, the three brothers Shakespeare. In Grimm, too, don't you know, the fairy tales. The third brother that marries the Sleeping Beauty and wins the best prize.
Best of best brothers. Good, better, best.
The Quaker librarian spring-halted near.
I should like to know,
he said,
which brother you... I understand you to suggest there was misconduct with one of the brothers, but perhaps I am anticipating.
He caught himself in the act, looked at all, refrained. An attendant from the doorway called,
Mr. Lister, Father Deneen wants...
Oh, Father Deneen, directly!
Swiftly, rectly, creaking, rectly, rectly, he was rectly gone. John Eglinton touched the foil.
Come,
he said.
Let us hear what you have to say of Richard and Edmund. You kept them for the last, didn't you?
In asking you to remember those two noble kinsmen, Uncle Richie and Uncle Edmund,
Stephen answered,
I feel I'm asking too much, perhaps. A brother is as easily forgotten as an umbrella.
Lapwing. Where is your brother? Apothecary's Hall. My whetstone. Him, then Cranley, Mulligan. Now these. Speech, speech. But act, act, speech. They mock to try you. Act, be acted on. Lapwing. I am tired of my voice, the voice of Esau. My kingdom for a drink. On.
You would say those names were already in the chronicles from which he took the stuff of his plays. Why did he take them rather than others? Richard, a whore's son, crookback, misbegotten, makes love to a widowed Anne. What's in a name? Woos and wins her. A whore's son, merry widow. Richard the Conqueror, third brother, came after William the Conquered. The other four acts of that play hang limply from that first. Of all his kings, Richard is the only king unshielded by Shakespeare's reverence, the angel of the world. Why is the underplot of King Lear, in which Edmund figures, lifted out of Sidney's Arcadia and spatchcocked onto a Celtic legend older than history?
That was Will's way.
John Eglinton defended.
We should not now combine a Norse saga with an excerpt from a novel by George Meredith. Que voulez-vous, Moore would say. He puts Bohemia on the seacoast and makes Ulysses quote Aristotle.
Why?
Stephen answered himself.
Because the theme of the false, or the usurping, or the adulterous brother, or all three in one, is to Shakespeare what the poor is not, always with him. The note of banishment, banishment from the heart, banishment from home, sounds uninterruptedly from the two gentlemen of Verona onward, till Prospero breaks his staff, buries it certain fathoms in the earth, and drowns his book. It doubles itself in the middle of his life, reflects itself in another, repeats itself, protasis, epitasis, catastasis, catastrophe. It repeats itself again when he is near the grave, when his married daughter Susan, chip of the old block, is accused of adultery. But it was the original sin that darkened his understanding, weakened his will, and left him in a strong inclination to evil. The words are those of my lord's bishops of Maynooth. An original sin, and like original sin, committed by another in whose sin he too has sinned. It is between the lines of his last written words. It is petrified on his tombstone, under which her four bones are not to be laid. Age has not withered it. Beauty and peace have not done it away. It is in infinite variety everywhere in the world he has created. In Much Ado About Nothing, twice in As You Like It, in The Tempest, in Hamlet, in Measure for Measure, and in all the other plays which I have not read.
He laughed to free his mind from his mind's bondage. Judge Eglinton summed up.
The truth is midway,
he affirmed.
He is the ghost and the prince. He is all in all.
He is,
Stephen said.
The boy of Act One is the mature man of Act Five, all in all. In Cymbeline, in Othello, he is bored and cuckold. He acts and is acted on. Lover of an ideal or a perversion, like Jose, he kills the real Carmen. His unremitting intellect is the horn-mad Iago, ceaselessly willing that the moor in him shall suffer.
Cuckoo, cuckoo.
Cuck Mulligan clucked lewdly.
Oh, word of fear.
Dark dome received, reverbed.
And what a character is Iago.
Undaunted, John Eglinton exclaimed.
When all is said, Dumas fils, or is it Dumas père, is right. After God, Shakespeare has created most.
Man delights him not, nor woman neither,
Stephen said.
He returns after a life of absence to that spot of earth where he was born, where he has always been, man and boy, a silent witness. And there, his journey of life ended, he plants his mulberry tree in the earth, then dies. The motion is ended. Grave diggers bury Hamlet père and Hamlet fils, a king and a prince at last in death, with incidental music. And what though murdered and betrayed, be wept by all frail, tender hearts, for, Dane or Dubliner, sorrow for the dead is the only husband from whom they refuse to be divorced. If you like the epilogue, look long on it. Prosperous Prospero, the good man rewarded. Lizzie, grandpa's lump of love, and Nuncle Richie, the bad man taken off by poetic justice to the place where the bad niggers go. Strong curtain. He found in the world without as actual what was in his world within as possible. Maeterlinck says, if Socrates leave his house today, he will find the sage seated on his doorstep. If Judas go forth tonight, it is to Judas his steps will tend. Every life is many days, day after day. We walk through ourselves, meeting robbers, ghosts, giants, old men, young men, wives, widows, brothers in love, but always meeting ourselves. The playwright who wrote the folio of this world and wrote it badly, he gave us light first and the sun 2 days later. The Lord of all things as they are, whom the most Roman of Catholics call Dio Boia, hangman God, is doubtless all in all in all of us, ostler and butcher, and would be bawd and cuckold too, but that in the economy of heaven, foretold by Hamlet, there are no more marriages, glorified man, an androgynous angel being a wife unto himself.
Eureka!
Buck Mulligan cried.
Eureka!
Suddenly happied, he jumped up and reached in a stride John Eglinton's desk.
May I?
He said.
The Lord has spoken to Malachy.
He began to scribble on a slip of paper.
Take some slips from the counter going out.
Those who are married.
Mr. Best, Deuce Herald, said.
All save one shall live. The rest shall keep as they are.
He laughed, unmarried, at Eglinton Johannes, of arts a bachelor.
Unwed, unfancied, ware of wiles, they finger ponder nightly each his variorum edition of the Taming of the Shrew.
You are a delusion,
said roundly John Eglinton to Stephen.
You have brought us all this way to show us a French triangle. Do you believe your own theory?
No,
Stephen said promptly.
Are you going to write it?
Mr. Best asked.
You ought to make it a dialogue, don't you know? Like the Platonic dialogues Wilde wrote.
John Eclecticon doubly smiled.
Well, in that case, he said, I don't see why you should expect payment for it, since you don't believe it yourself. Dowden believes there is some mystery in Hamlet, but will say no more. Herr Blythroy, the man Piper met in Berlin, who was working up that Rutland theory, believes that the secret is hidden in the Stratford Monument. He is going to visit the present Duke, Piper says, and prove to him that his ancestor wrote the plays. It will come as a surprise to his grace, but he believes his theory.
I believe. O Lord, help my unbelief. That is, help me to believe or help me to unbelieve. Who helps to believe? Ego men. Who to unbelieve? Other chap.
You are the only contributor to Dana who asks for pieces of silver. Then I don't know about the next number. Fred Ryan wants space for an article on economics.
Fred Ryan. 2 pieces of silver he lent me. Tide you over. Economics.
For a guinea,
Stephen said,
you can publish this interview.
Buck Mulligan stood up from his laughing, scribbling, laughing, and then gravely said, honeying malice,
I called upon the bard Kinch at his summer residence in Upper Mecklenburg Street, and found him deep in the study of the summer contra gentiles, in the company of 2 gonorrhea ladies, Fresh Nelly and Rosalie, the coal key whore.
He broke away.
Come, Kinch, come, wandering Angus of the birds.
Come, Kinch, you have eaten all we left. I will serve you your orts and offals.
Stephen rose.
Life is many days. This will end.
We shall see you tonight,
John Eglinton said.
Nothramie Moore says Malachy Mulligan must be there.
Buck Mulligan flaunted his slip and Panama.
Monsieur Moore,
he said,
lecturer on French letters to the youth of Ireland. I'll be there. Come, Kinch, the bards must drink. Can you walk straight?
Laughing, he... Swill till 11. Irish night's entertainment. Lubber.
Stephen followed a lubber.
One day in the National Library we had a discussion. Shakes. After his lub back I followed. I gall his kibe.
Stephen, greeting, then all a mort, followed a lubber, jester, a well-kempt head, new barbered, out of the vaulted cell into a shattering daylight of no thoughts.
What have I learned of them, of me? Walk like Haynes now. The constant reader's room. In the reader's book, Cashel, Boyle, O'Connor, Fitzmaurice, Tisdall, Farrar, perhaps his polysyllables. Item, was Hamlet mad? The Quaker's pate, Godlily, with a priestine in book talk.
Oh, please do, sir. I shall be most pleased.
Amused, Buck Mulligan mused in pleasant murmur with himself, self-nodding.
I'm pleased, Bottom.
The turnstile.
Is that blue ribboned hat, idly writing? What looked?
The curving balustrade.
Smooth sliding Mincius.
Puck Mulligan, Panama helmeted, went step by step, iambing, trolling,
John Eglinton, my Jo, John, why won't you wed a wife?
He sputtered to the air.
Oh, the chinless Chinaman, Chin Chon Eglinton. We went over to their play box, Haynes and I, the Plumber's Hall. Our players are creating a new art for Europe, like the Greeks or Monsieur Metternich. Abbey Theatre. I smell the public sweat of monks.
He spat blank.
Forgot? Any more than he forgot the whipping lousy Lucy gave him, and left the femme de trente ans. And why no other children born, and his first child a girl? Afterward, go back. The door accrues still there. He has his cake. And the deuce youngling, minion of pleasure, Fido's toyable fair hair. I forgot.
Longworth and Bacardi Atkinson were there.
Puck Mulligan footed featly, trilling.
I hardly hear the purlieu cry or a tommy talk as I pass one by, before my thoughts begin to run on F. McCurdy Atkinson, the same that had the wooden leg and that filibustering fillybag, that never dared to slake his drouth, McGee that had the chinless mouth, being afraid to marry on earth, they masturbated for all they were worth.
Jest on, know thyself. Halted below me, a quizzer looks at me. I halt.
Mournful mummer,
Buck Mulligan moaned.
Singh has left off wearing black to be like nature. Only crows, priests, and English coal are black.
A laugh tripped over his lips.
Longworth is awfully sick,
he said,
after what you wrote about that old hake Gregory. Oh, you inquisitional, drunken Jew Jesuit. She gets you a job on the paper, and then you go and slate her drivel to Jesus. Couldn't you do the eights touch?
He went on and down, mopping, chanting with waving, graceful arms.
The most beautiful book that has come out of our country in my time. One thinks of Homer.
He stopped at the stairfoot.
I have conceived a play for the mummers,
he said solemnly.
The pillared Moorish hall, shadows entwined. Gone the nine men's Morris with caps of indices.
In sweetly varying voices, Buck Mulligan read his tablet.
Every man his own wife. Or a honeymoon in the hand, a national immorality in three orgasms, by Bollocky Mulligan.
He turned a happy patch's smirk to Stephen Stay.
The disguise, I fear, is thin. But listen.
He read Marcato.
Characters. Toby Tostoff, a ruined pole. Crab, a bushranger. Medical Dick and Medical Davy, two birds with one stone. Mother Grogan, a water carrier. Fresh Nelly and Rosalie, the coal key whore.
He laughed, lolling a to-and-fro head, walking on, followed by Stephen, and mirthfully he told the shadows, souls of men.
Oh, the night in the Camden Hall when the daughters of Aaron had to lift their skirts to step over you as you lay in your mulberry-coloured, multicoloured, multitudinous vomit.
The most innocent son of Aaron,
Stephen said,
for whom they ever lifted them.
About to pass through the doorway, feeling one behind, he stood aside.
Part. The moment is now. Where then? If Socrates leave his house today, if Judas go forth tonight, why? That lies in space which I in time must come to ineluctably. My will, his will that fronts me, sees between.
A man passed out between them, bowing, greeting.
Good day again,
Buck Mulligan said.
The portico. Here I watched the birds for augury. Angus of the birds, they go, they come. Last night I flew, easily flew. Men wondered, street of harlots after. A cream fruit melon he held to me. In, you will see.
The wandering Jew,
Buck Mulligan whispered with clown's awe.
Did you see his eye?
He looked upon you to lust after you. I fear thee, ancient mariner. Ho, Kitch, thou art in peril. Get thee a breech pad.
Manor of Oxenford. Day, wheelbarrow sun over arch of bridge.
A dark back went before them.
Step of a pard. Down, out by the gateway. Under portcullis barbs.
They followed.
Offend me still. Speak on.
Kind air defined the coins of houses in Kildare Street.
No birds.
Frail from the housetops, two plumes of smoke ascended, pluming. And in a flaw of softness, softly were blown.
Cease to strive. Peace of the Druid priests of Cymbeline, hierophantic, from wide earth an altar. Lord, we the gods, and let our crooked smokes climb to their nostrils from our blessed altars.